In this week's edition of our collective nightmare, we find ourselves in the surreal dystopia where history is being systematically erased by the very institution charged with defending it. Yes, folks, the Pentagon has decided that diversity content is so threatening that it's worth sacrificing Holocaust remembrance articles, September 11th reflections, and even cancer awareness pieces to cleanse their platforms of any perceived ideological contamination. Because nothing says national security like a good old-fashioned purge of empathy and historical memory. More than 24,000 articles, covering everything from sexual assault prevention to suicide awareness, are either already gone or teetering on the brink of digital oblivion, all thanks to an automated script that's as precise as a toddler wielding a sledgehammer in a glass factory. The Secretary of Defense's order was clear: eradicate anything remotely resembling diversity, equity, or inclusion. And oh boy, did they comply with gusto. Now we have URLs awkwardly stamped with day, where stories about Holocaust survivors once stood. A chilling reminder that ignorance is indeed bliss when you're running from accountability. Articles that dared to remember September 11th or educate about breast cancer now bear the same scarlet letters before disappearing into the void. This isn't just collateral damage, it's willful amnesia masquerading as policy compliance. It's an Orwellian nightmare where acknowledging past atrocities and current societal issues gets you blacklisted under the guise of purging diversity content. The Anti-Defamation League rightly calls it out for what it is, a moral failure wrapped up in bureaucratic nonsense. But wait, there's more absurdity. The Pentagon assures us they're pleased with how quickly everyone's fallen in line with this directive because nothing screams success like erasing decades worth of important narratives overnight without oversight or common sense. So here we are, watching history vanish at breakneck speed while those responsible shrug off responsibility like it's yesterday's news. Welcome to America, the land where remembering our collective tragedies becomes too controversial for government websites, but perfectly acceptable for revisiting through third-party archives if you know where to look. And lest you think sanity might prevail eventually, well, don't hold your breath waiting for course corrections when human discretion finally re-enters the equation. It might take longer than anticipated, since apparently thinking things through wasn't part of anyone's original plan here anyway. In conclusion, buckle up, because truth isn't just stranger than fiction. It's being systematically deleted by those who should know better but clearly don't care enough not to let chaos reign supreme instead.
Of white people problems, today we're talking about the latest crisis in the land of privilege, the Saturday Night Live hosting lineup. Yes, folks, it's that time again when we collectively gasp over who gets to stand on Studio 8H and read cue cards for a living. First up, Mikey Madison is making her SNL debut fresh off an Oscar win. Now I know what you're thinking. How will she ever manage to transition from accepting gold statues to delivering jokes written by Harvard grads? The struggle is real. And let's not forget Morgan Wallen returning as the musical guest. Because nothing screams white people problems like debating whether this country singer deserves another shot after his public oopsie-daisy moment last year. But wait, Jack Black's back too, hosting for the fourth time. You can almost hear the collective sigh of relief from suburban living rooms everywhere. Finally, someone who understands our need for slapstick humor and air guitar solos. And Elton John with Brandi Carlile? Their new album's out. It's called Who Believes in Angels? Spoiler alert! It's mostly people with first world issues who have time to ponder such celestial questions between yoga classes and kale smoothies. Then there's Jon Hamm hosting ahead of his Apple TV Plus series premiere. Because if there's one thing white America loves more than artisanal cheese, it's streaming services with obscure shows starring handsome men in suits. Meanwhile, Lizzo returns as a musical guest, breaking up this parade of vanilla with some actual flavor. But don't worry, we'll keep it safe by containing all that energy within the confines of a late-night comedy show. So there you have it, the pressing issue keeping us up at night. Which celebrity will grace us with their presence on a sketch show that's been around longer than most hipster craft breweries? In conclusion, while some are concerned about climate change or economic disparity, others are losing sleep over whether SNL's 50th anniversary special will include enough behind-the-scenes documentaries to fill their Peacock queue. Priorities, am I right?
Ah, the daily ritual of watching a nation teeter on the brink of its own making. Today we bring you another episode in the ongoing saga of political self-preservation masquerading as governance. starring none other than Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in a move that seems ripped straight from the pages of a dystopian novel. Netanyahu has opted to reignite conflict in Gaza, shattering a ceasefire and sending shockwaves through an already fragile society, in what can only be described as a masterclass in prioritizing personal power over public welfare. Netanyahu's decision comes conveniently ahead of a crucial budget vote. His strategic timing has rallied his faltering coalition, ensuring that his grip on leadership remains intact, even if it means sacrificing lives and stability, because nothing says "I'm here for you" quite like plunging your country back into war while dodging corruption charges. And let's not forget the protesters who gathered outside parliament with banners, questioning whether it's the future of Israel or just Netanyahu's coalition that's truly at stake. A rhetorical question, perhaps, but one that highlights an uncomfortable truth. When leaders prioritize their survival over national security and hostage negotiations, everyone loses. Meanwhile, as bombs fall and tensions rise, there's talk of civil war brewing within this divided society. The citizens are left to ponder whether democracy is just another casualty in this relentless pursuit of power. But fear not, for amidst the chaos and despair, there's always room for legislative innovation, like advancing bills that promise to politicize judicial appointments, further eroding any semblance of checks and balances. While some still rally behind Netanyahu with cries for continued military action, because nothing unites like shared destruction, others see this as yet another chapter in an all-too-familiar story where leaders escape accountability under cover of conflict. So here we are again, watching history repeat itself with grim predictability, as leaders play chess with human lives on a board rigged against them from the start. Welcome to your daily dose of dystopia, where every day is another step toward absurdity, wrapped neatly in irony's embrace.
Welcome, dear existential wanderers, to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the peculiarities of existence with a touch of dry humor and a dash of irony. Today, we're inspired by an article from CNN titled, "A Federal Judge in New York Ordered the Case of Columbia University Graduate and Palestinian Activist Mahmoud Khalil Be Transferred from New York to New Jersey." Ah, the human condition, a tapestry woven with threads of absurdity and bureaucracy. Consider Mahmoud Khalil's situation, a man who finds himself shuffled between states like a pawn on life's chessboard, all because his geographical coordinates did not align with legal jurisdictions. It seems that even in our quest for justice, location is everything. Who knew that existential dread could have such a strong sense of place? Khalil's story invites us to reflect on the notion of borders, not just the physical ones drawn on maps, but those invisible lines demarcating freedom from confinement. Is it not amusing how our identities can hinge so precariously on arbitrary lines? One moment you're enjoying a bagel at Columbia University. Next thing you know, you're contemplating life's mysteries in an ICE detention facility in Louisiana. But let's pause here for a moment. What exactly does it mean to be free? Is freedom merely the absence of bars, or is it something more abstract and elusive? Perhaps it's akin to Schrodinger's cat, simultaneously existing and non-existing until observed by an immigration officer. In this Kafkaesque dance with authority, Khalil stands as both participant and spectator, a modern Sisyphus rolling his boulder uphill through courtrooms across state lines. And while he may be physically detained, his spirit remains unyielding as he asserts his right to protest against perceived injustices. Yet one can't help but wonder if true freedom lies not in resistance, but in accepting life's absurdities with a wry smile. As we ponder these questions over our morning coffee, or perhaps something stronger, we're reminded that life is indeed full of contradictions. We strive for meaning amidst chaos, while knowing full well that chaos might be all there is. So here's to Mahmoud Khalil, a testament to resilience in face of existential uncertainty, and to each one of us navigating this bewildering world armed only with wit and skepticism. Until next time on the Existential Crisis Hour, keep questioning everything, even if answers remain frustratingly out of reach.
In the theater of capitalism, where every entity must justify its existence through profit or perish under the weight of financial scrutiny, Amtrak stands as a relic, a stubborn monument to an era when public service meant more than the bottom line. Yet, even this bastion of public utility is not immune to the feverish dreams of privatization zealots, who see in its tracks only untapped potential for exploitation. The departure of Amtrak's CEO Stephen Gardner marks yet another chapter in the ongoing saga of corporate musical chairs, a spectacle where leaders are shuffled and reshuffled to appease a ravenous system that demands constant growth and unyielding efficiency. His exit is less about leadership and more a strategic maneuver to maintain favor with an administration that views public ownership as anathema to progress. Enter Elon Musk, the self-styled oracle of innovation, whose solution to every inefficiency is simple: privatize it. Musk's vision for Amtrak, and indeed any public service, is one where failure is not just possible but necessary. In his world, bankruptcy isn't a disaster, but a vital mechanism for improvement. The irony? This fetishization of market forces comes from a figure whose own ventures have often skirted insolvency, buoyed by government subsidies and investor faith. Amidst this circus, Amtrak clings to its original mission, serving communities without regard for profitability. It is tasked with providing long-distance services across rural America, hemorrhaging money in pursuit of accessibility over affluence. And while its ridership has rebounded post-pandemic, achieving record numbers and revenues in fiscal year 2024, these gains are dwarfed by operating losses that fuel calls for privatization. Critics ignore that Amtrak was never meant to be profitable. It was created as a lifeline for freight railroads drowning under their own passenger services losses. Now it serves as a scapegoat for systemic failures, a convenient target in debates about federal funding priorities and infrastructure neglect. The board's optimism about building the world-class passenger rail system this country deserves rings hollow against decades of inadequate investment. America's rail network remains trapped in disrepair, not because it's inherently flawed, but because it has been starved by those who would rather see it sold off than supported. As we hurtle toward a future where everything must pay its way or be discarded, Amtrak's struggle becomes emblematic of our collective madness, sacrificing societal welfare on the altar of profit margins and shareholder returns. In this capitalist fever dream, even the rails we ride upon are reduced to mere commodities, valued only insofar as they can be monetized or left to rust if deemed inefficient by market standards. And so we watch as another piece of public good teeters on the brink, not due to inherent flaws, but because it cannot conform to an economic model that worships profit above all else.